I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
And in this episode, we focused on movies about kidnapping young women. It's Minority Report and Monsters, Inc.
Yep, classic case of a DreamWorks and a Disney film coming out at the same time, proper twin film. Everyone knows these are the same movie. Yep. So much press about it at the time, obviously, because they're exactly the same.
It was the Barbenheimer of the era.
Yeah. The Barbenheimer of 2002, folks, was Minority Inc.
Monsters Report.
Monster Report.
So where do you want to start?
So the fun thing about this episode is that this was one, obviously a fun episode, that I had like put in our notes when we first started doing the podcast, and by the time we got around to like doing this, I couldn't remember why. But having rewatched them both, these are both movies I've seen before many times. I can see it. They're the same. They are the same movie. Yeah. They're very much the same. So they're both about a guy who is working for a large corporation, and he is like the best at what he does, and he fully believes in what the corporation does. And then he kind of discovers that they are exploiting these people and essentially torturing them for their own, you know, for their own gain. And it's also something that doesn't necessarily need to happen. And he starts to question the whole system. And then, you know, has a confidant in the head of the whole company. And then it turns out that person is not quite who they seem, and also knows that what they're doing is wrong, but will do anything to keep the company going. And there's, you know, someone who's actually law enforcement who's working with him, and who you think is maybe not a nice person, but is actually doing things for actual good. I feel like they're just the same movie. There's a fight slash chase sequence through a factory where and there's a scene where someone goes through a machine and you think that they've been squished and they haven't, and you know,
it's the same movie.
I think the opening is interesting.
Which one?
The opening is the same in both movies. So in both movies you start off with kind of a look at how the system works.
Yeah.
In Monsters, Inc., that's a simulation of a monster, you know, a monster scaring a kid. In Minority Report, it's seeing flashes of this vision of someone being killed. Then you get the introduction to the main character as the best in their field. And then you have an ad for the company and what they do. And that very much emphasizes, like, you all need us. Everyone is better off because we exist. You need this company to exist. Yeah. Which is a fun, you know, thing to include in the first, like, 5 minutes of your movie when you know that that company is going to turn out to be exploiting people, essentially. But they both had ads. I thought that was really interesting that in the first 5 minutes of the movie, both of them had an ad for the company.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting to me.
Yeah, it's rewatching them, they're both very enjoyable movies. Yeah. I know a lot of people don't really particularly like Tom Cruise, but like you have to give him mad props for like all the stuff he's been doing recently, because I watched a whole thing about the swimming scene he had to do in one of the Mission Impossible movies, and apparently he legitimately like held his breath for like 5 minutes.
I mean, it's the same in this movie. You know the bathtub scene?
Yeah.
They wanted to do that one bubble coming up as CGI, and Tom Cruise like literally practiced in his own bathtub to learn how to hold his breath in such a way that he could let out one single bubble that would rise to the surface.
Yeah.
And they were like, dude, we were gonna spend so much money on CGI to do this, and he was like, No, I could do it, I swear. It's like, is it Margot Robbie in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? Is that right? No, is she in that movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, where she does the single tear, and she actually did it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that thing of, like, oh, we know that this is going to be something that we have to, like, fix and post, or we have to do effects for it, and the actor's like, no, I can just do that.
Yeah.
I can just do that thing you know, and it's called acting. But no, the fact that he was able to, like, that he literally went and practiced to make sure he could do, like, the single bubble rising to the surface the way they wanted it to. And it looks perfect in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, it looks, you know, exactly like, obviously, what they wanted. And he just did that. He just actually got in an ice bath and then did that.
I did mention something while we were watching it. I don't know if there was a lore reason why the movie is so blown out. You said...
They bleached it.
They bleached the film.
They bleached the film.
For what purpose?
Because
I'm assuming you've got it in a note here.
Yeah, I'm sure I have it in a note here. They literally, like... So they deliberately overlit the movie when they were shooting it.
Right.
And then they bleach bypassed it, the negatives of it, during post-production. So it was to give it like a saturated look, so it looked almost like a film noir.
Right.
Like it's almost black and white, but it's not quite. Like yeah. There is, you know, there's clearly color in there. But the only scene that they didn't do it with is when he's having the dream about his son being kidnapped.
Right.
That's the only moment where it's like just proper full color, properly lit.
Yeah.
Everything else is this kind of film noir style. And I imagine to some extent it must have been a little bit of an ode to Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Which is also based on Philip K. Dick.
Yeah.
So they literally like deliberately made it washed out. There was a comment from someone who said it looks like it was shot on chrome, like it was caught on the fleeing bumper of a late 70s car. it was a very deliberate look to the movie, but there's definitely sequences where it looks really overexposed.
Yeah.
As a result of that process.
Yeah, there's a few sequences when they're at the cabin next to the lake.
Mm-hmm.
They don't look like people because they're just like so heavily lit.
Yeah.
And also the fact that there's like no color. So it's just like they're like weird glowing creatures, like mannequins.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you know, I was hoping there was a lore reason, like hypothetically in the future, you know, ozone depletion or something, you know.
Right.
Why it no, looks like I don't that. Think so that's... if it was a style thing, it makes more sense now looking at it. But like at the time, I was just. You know, rewatching and noticing these little parts, I was like,
yeah.
Why does it look like this?
It's interesting that you say that because they did, they put a lot of work into the world of it.
Yeah.
Because Steven Spielberg assembled a team 3 years before they started production to put together what he called the 2054 Bible. Which is like an 80-page document, I think, of exactly what the world would be like.
Right.
And that included 16 experts. So there is Neil Gershenfeld, who's a professor at the Media Lab in MIT. Sean Jones, director of biomedical research at the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. William Mitchell, Dean of the School of Architecture at MIT, Peter Calthorpe, the new urbanism evangelist. I don't know what that even means.
Sounds like a made-up title.
Jaron Lanier, who is an inventor of virtual reality technology. Douglas Copeland, author and commentator. Stuart Brand, author, scientist, and co-creator of the Well online community. Kevin Kelly, the founder of Wired magazine. Harold Belker, who is a car designer. And John Underkoffler, who is a science and technology advisor. So he literally got together a group of experts in different fields and was like, what would 2054 look like? Like, what kind of technology will we have in that universe? What kind of architecture would we have? What can we expect to see? And I mean, some of this stuff has happened in the meantime.
Yeah.
You know, not all of it, but we're only not even halfway to 2054 from when the movie was made.
Yeah.
The only thing that he put in that he knew was not realistic was jetpacks, but he just kind of wanted to make a nod to like sci-fi films of the 70s and 80s and stuff.
Which is ironic because we do actually, military people do have jetpacks. We just don't have the cool flying car.
We don't have like
car network.
You know, police going around on jetpacks chasing people in the streets. Yeah. We're not quite at that. But I mean, maybe by 2054 we will be.
Yeah.
You know, we never.
There was a thing I read recently. Talking of like technology and things developing in a fun way. So in Japan, gangs have been using drones to transport drugs around.
Mm-hmm.
So the police then bought drones to catch the other drones.
No.
And there was a report saying the police officers who were doing this were like, "We're the most fun we've been having in years." So it's like, yeah, that's so funny.
Just doing those drone chases. That's fun.
Just Yakuza drones versus police drones and like high speed chases between buildings. It'd be real cool. Mm. It's definitely an interesting world. There is a question that I have to bring up, though.
Yeah, what is it?
So, the two characters that are the same in these movies, one is obviously Boo, and the other one is Agatha.
Yeah, Boo and Agatha.
If Agatha is so powerful,
mm-hmm.
and what you learn through watching the movie, obviously spoilers, if you haven't listened to our podcast before, we're going to spoil the movies.
Kind of already spoiled the movies, in my description of them. Because now you know, if you haven't seen Minority Report and you go to watch it and you see Burgess, you're going to be like, oh, Mr. Waternoose.
Yeah. The whole thing about how the precogs, which were basically just kids that had, who were born to drug addicts from this, you know, futuristic drug that's obviously fictional, but they're trying to make it go, like, countrywide. So it's located in DC.
Mm-hmm.
If these kids
were,
like, one of the few that survived out of this treatment that they came up with trying to help these kids who had been affected by this you know, birth of, like, this unpurified street drug that's mm-hmm. now been purified and, like, you know, all the people who used it are now dead.
Yeah.
Where are they going to get the kids from? There's never a question that's never brought up in the entire movie.
What? They're going to get more kids?
Because the whole...
They're not going to get more kids.
But how are they going to make it go, well, like... is there, like, a line? Are they like, oh, sorry, that red ball is slightly outside of our jurisdiction. We can't do it. There's no way that the coverage... like, their psychic coverage goes that far.
I don't know. I mean, it's run by a murderer.
Yeah, but it's on the East Coast.
Right.
So how are they going to, like, read the mind? Like, how are they going to get... like, Red Ball comes up, they've got an hour before someone kills somebody, but it's in California.
It's interesting because in the original story, they're not the children of drug addicts who have gone through this process, this experimental process. They're just deformed children.
Right.
Who have mutated with these abilities.
Right.
Like the X-Men.
Yeah.
But also, there's no one trying to expand the network in the story.
Yeah.
The story, have you read the short story?
No.
It's totally different.
Yeah.
I mean,
most books are.
I think it's because it's a short story. There was no way to, like, turn it into a full film and keep it as it was. So, I mean, John Anderson is in it, but, like, the entire concept is quite different. I mean, like, the precogs exist, whatever. He doesn't kidnap one of the precogs in the short story. It does, the catalyst in both the short story and in the movie is that the ball comes out saying he's going to kill someone and he's never heard of the person he's supposed to kill.
Yeah.
Because that is what happens in both. But in the short story, the guy that he's supposed to kill is the head of some, like, military organization the guy he's supposed to kill has framed him himself to make the thing come up because it's happened because he's been framed.
Yeah.
Right? And so then, that puts him on the path that leads him to finding the person and potentially killing them.
Yeah.
And in the short story, the guy has deliberately framed him so that because he wants to shut down the company and stage a military coup.
Right.
And his way of doing that is get their top guy, frame him for murder, he's going to go and find him, and either he has to kill him, which he doesn't think he'll do, or he doesn't kill him and proves that their system is flawed.
Right.
So he just kills him to keep the company going.
Right.
At the end, that's it. He's just like, well, if I don't kill him, then the whole system doesn't work. Yeah. I have to kill this man. He just does it, and it's just there's just like a closed loop. So it's interesting in this one that it's like, what I find interesting is that the Minority Report isn't even his.
Yeah.
The whole idea that, and I mean, and but he still gets the, you know, and Agatha is the one who says it to him in the movie, this idea, which he realizes in the short story as well, but then chooses to do it, that, like, he has the choice.
Yeah.
That as much as it has been seen that this has happened, when it comes down to it, in the moment, he can choose not to kill the guy, or yeah, he can choose to do it, and it's entirely his choice. But knowing that it's his choice means that he has to accept that everything that he's believed in and this company that he's worked for and these people that he's put away, like, it's all been a lie.
Yeah.
And for Sully, and what you think is the same idea with the, like, he fully believes that the only way for the monsters to get power is by scaring children.
Yeah.
And so getting the screams.
The first time Boo laughs and, like, everything explodes because it's got too much electricity or whatever, yeah, like, juice running through it. They're like, what the hell was that? It's like, yeah.
He has that moment, because there's, I think I took it down in, for both movies, but in Monsters, Inc., that's it. He has that moment where Boo laughs and you can see Sully go, like, what has just happened?
Yeah.
And it's followed almost immediately by her being afraid of the closet and him seeing just how terrified she is of Randall.
Yeah.
And realizing, like, this is the trauma we're putting on these children.
Yeah.
And putting that together with, hang on, maybe we don't even need to be scaring them in the first place. Yeah. Like, maybe there's another way around this. And I did take a note of when that moment happened in the other movie, but I can't remember it off the top of my head. I feel like it might be, like, initially, well, I don't know, because it I don't think it is initially when he sees that it's him on the ball, you know what I mean? Because I right. think he's still at that point, like, he's confused about it, but he's like, well, I must be going to kill this guy, you know what I mean? Where was it? There was definitely a moment, and I feel like I took it down. Maybe I didn't. Oh, I think it's the, do you know what it is? I think it's when he goes to look at the footage from the murder that Agatha tries to show him.
Oh, right. And, sorry, I was like, what murder?
No. In the Minority Report, where there might have been before that, but there's a moment there at least where he kind of is like, hang on a second, why is that file deleted?
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason for it to be gone, because we always get divisions from the three of them, so someone has covered something up here.
Yeah.
Because there's no other reason for it. I feel like I definitely did take down a note, though, so I'm annoyed that I can't find it. But there's just, like, yeah, there's moments where you can see it in his head that he's kind of going, hang on a second, something here is not... Oh, yeah, so it is... So it's Agatha. I think it's a combination of Agatha when she grabs him.
Yeah.
Is him being like, this is not what we're supposed to believe. But also there's some things that Whitworth says, so Colin Farrell's character says to him, that has him kind of opening his mind a little bit and going, like, maybe what I've believed all the time isn't always correct.
Yeah.
So they start the ball rolling, and that's why he then goes and finds that, and then it's solidified in his head when he sees the missing data, and he's like, hang on, something here is not right. So I do like that, like, quite early on in both movies they have, and in both cases it does involve the girl. They have this moment where they're like, this, you know, questioning their worldview.
It's funny because, like, a lot of our previous fun episodes have been almost borderline a stretch.
Yeah.
But
I thought this one was going to be more of a stretch when I couldn't remember it, but like they're so similar.
Yeah, it was scarily similar.
Yeah. I don't even remember where I got the idea, but I'm sure I haven't written it down, but I'm sure it was like just like some guy on a thread on Reddit or something was like, what about these two?
These movies are the same, right?
So if you've ever on Reddit posted that these movies are the same, thank you. Because I don't think I would have looked into it. And then I obviously liked it enough that I put it in a note and then forgot about why. And then I'm glad that this is one that we chose to do because they are very weirdly similar.
Yeah.
Really weirdly similar films. And they did come out, within a year of each other.
Yeah. It's bizarre. It would have been interesting if you were a parent at the time.
Yeah.
And watched Minority Report and then you're like, oh, your kids see it. Whatever DreamWorks movie come out and you're like, oh,
no, Pixar. So Minority Report is the DreamWorks movie.
Oh, yeah,
which
sorry,
is
Pixar.
Hilarious.
And then and then you take your kid to Monsters Inc. and you're like,
I wonder why I did because I saw Monster. I went to see Monsters Inc. for my birthday that year.
Okay.
I thought it was for my 10th birthday, but it must have been my 11th because it would have been 2002.
Right.
So I saw Monsters Inc. with a group of friends for my 11th birthday. But I feel like I saw Minority Report the year it came out, or like very shortly after it came out. I didn't see it in cinema, but we had it on DVD. And I don't think I was much older than that when I saw it for the first time.
Right.
Because I know I had certainly seen it before I'd seen Phone Booth, and I saw Phone Booth not very long after it came out. I think I was 14 when I watched Phone Booth.
So you do bring up an interesting person in this movie.
Colin Farrell.
How do you feel about the Irishisms of Colin Farrell through the movie?
what did he say that was Irish? Oh, do you mean like that he wanted to be a priest?
The fact that he wanted to be a priest, the fact that he was like, took the first opportunity to have like a fist fight with Tom Cruise, the fact that he has like, is it like the Michael?
The fist fight thing is like, it's purely, I don't think that's an Irish thing. I think that's purely that the concept of him being a police officer in a place where people are arrested before they even commit crimes.
So he's waiting
to actually have a criminal to fight. You know what I mean? Like, because it's the pre-crime people get to everything first.
Yeah.
So the fact that he's actually got someone.
Is it Saint Michael?
What about Saint Michael?
Who he's got a medallion or a something that he keeps kissing on a
chain.
Oh,
I didn't notice that, but it's probably Saint Christopher because that's quite common in Ireland.
Right. It's just like.
Did he? I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, he does it. He does it when.
Maybe I just see that as a normal thing.
He does it when he like wraps it around his fist when he fights Tom Cruise when they're in the car factory.
Right.
And he also does it after what's his face blasts him in the chest at the end of the movie.
Colin Farrell, Minority Report medal.
Yeah.
I wonder if someone like
someone's come up with the thing.
I'm sure someone is.
Yeah, there was just there was some interesting things that came to mind while we were watching it, and just one of them was the fact that like how are they going to spread the network out? The fact that in Monsters, Inc., you have an entire civilization that completely revolves around scaring children, and no one's done any other, like, energy research. You have to wonder how profitable it is, because, like, power companies fluctuate. They keep talking about the fact they're in an energy crisis. Does that mean everything is electric, including Mike Wiskowski's car?
It's a St. Christopher's medal.
St. Christopher.
I like how I could just tell without any memory of it being a thing that he did. I was like, oh, it's probably a St. Christopher medal.
Interesting thing that I picked up and you didn't, because it's so normal.
I mean, it's not abnormal.
Yeah. Where was I going with my thought? Sorry. Yeah, it's interesting that, and then they talk about the fact that, like, and when they get banished, like, other monsters have been banished from the monsters world into the human world. Like, they are two different dimensions.
They sell them at Michael Hill in New Zealand, so okay. It's not an Irish exclusive thing. Continue.
Well, where was I? Yeah, no, it's interesting because, like, the door technology, Do we want to talk about the weird link in the rest of the Pixar extended universe?
Which one? Are you talking about Brave?
So yeah, Brave is the interesting one. So in my headcanon, Brave takes place after Wall-E.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the humans that have come back, and like I guess like one of the Axiom ships was just had people from the UK in it, and because when two people who have one person can have a recessive gene and the other person can have a dominant gene, a lot of kids turn out ginger.
Everyone in Brave descends from like an Adam and Eve Scottish person on the Axiom.
Not Adam and Eve, I'm just saying that dominant and dominant genes take over and being red hair is a dominant gene.
It's a recessive gene. Then,
what's that? Yeah, but if you have two people with recessive genes, it becomes a dominant gene. Yeah. So the old lady from Brave is Boo. Because of the weird carpet that looks also, like Sully's.
Did you notice where they banish Randall to?
No.
The caravan from...
Oh, yeah.
A Bug's Life.
Yeah, and yeah.
With the Pizza Planet truck outside.
Yeah. The gator got in the house!
Yeah. Again.
Again, yeah. Yeah, they just murdered him. Here's
something I want to pose to you.
Okay.
On like, character comparisons.
Right.
Whitwer, Colin Farrell's character.
Yeah.
I think... the Monster Inc. equivalent is two people.
Okay.
I think he's part Randall,
yeah.
Part Roz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's more Roz than Randall, but his character is the Randall of the movie.
Yeah, that's basically what I thought. Like,
he wants,
in terms of like what he's doing, he is Roz rather than Randall.
Yeah.
But
he wants to take over.
In terms of the relationship.
He wants to make the whole pre-crime federal rather than, and he's looking for any excuse. He's definitely the rival in the movie.
Yeah.
He's
very much shown as the kind of nemesis
character.
You think
he's a bad guy, you're like led to think he's a bad guy, but then it turns out he's not the bad guy.
Yeah.
It's Old Man Spider.
He just trusts they all just keep trusting Burgess. And it's the same thing, they keep trusting Waternoose.
Do you think here's a theory for you?
Yeah.
That I just came up with, hadn't mm-hmm. thought it through, so it might be full of holes.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Do you think the monsters from are real monsters? Are just like some sort of sect of the monsters that don't want to like teach kids comedy that have escaped into the real world?
No, because our real monsters takes place before this.
Oh, okay.
Because Monsters, Inc. takes place between 1999 and 2001, I believe, based on dates that appear on documents and things in the movie.
Okay.
And Our Real Monsters was prior to that.
Right.
I can't remember when Our Real Monsters was actually set.
Yeah.
But
it was... Yeah, when is it set in canon?
Oh my god, now I need to find out when Our Real Monsters is set.
When in canon does this take place? Turns out they're not monsters.
Mutated humans in the future.
Yeah.
Oh, it corrected my spelling of when I tried to do that.
Classic. the thought occurred to me. It's interesting because, like, obviously one's a kid's movie and aimed at small children and young adults, and the other one is, like, you know, developed from Philip K. Dick, and so... The question becomes, like, what the worlds look like afterwards. Because obviously you get way more power, there's no energy crisis, that means their civilization can expand. They seem very hardy in comparison to humans, so that would be an interesting mindset. Would then, like, are they on a planet? Are there other planets in the solar system? With all this excess and, you know, energy, would they be able to, you know, fuel a space program? Are they on a parallel planet? How do the doors work? Like, are they Rosen Epstein wormholes to, like, between reality? Like, how the doors are the biggest piece of technology that's in question.
So
what have you discovered?
Well, Aria Monsters, like, There doesn't seem to be a clear timeline of when it happened, but...
Okay.
They had a crossover episode with the Rugrats.
Oh, okay.
And the Rugrats was set, like, at the time that the Rugrats was happening, I believe. And the crossover episode was in 1999.
Oh, which interesting.
Which is when Monsters, Inc. was operating.
Interesting. I've come on to the...
Like, so I think 2001 is when they'd shifted into laughter, not things. So that means Ariel... No, it means the time that Ariel Monsters was happening was while Monsters, Inc. was still operating as Monsters, Inc. and scaring children and stuff. But maybe they were... Because their whole thing was they were going out doing scare missions, right?
Yeah.
Maybe they're just a sect of Monsters, Inc.
Maybe. Or maybe they're like a startup company who hasn't sort of figured out how they're going to get the power out of the kids.
Yeah, they're just scaring them, but they're not actually collecting the energy.
Yeah. So the point I was trying to make... What does the world look like after Agatha, Dash, and I can't remember the third one's name. The precogs.
Arthur,
yeah. All, like, live happily ever after. Do people just go back to murdering each other? They're like, the precogs are gone.
I hope people don't go back to murdering each other, but...
That you know they will.
Yeah, people will. It's an interesting question. Because, I mean... They obviously have... really skilled teams.
Yeah.
Who can take down people who are committing crimes. They just need to change it to people who have already committed rather or are in the process of committing rather than people who are planning to commit the crimes. Yeah. And I mean, you know, the question becomes like, is it, you know, where is the morality in it? Like if it's
It becomes a trolley problem.
Yeah, it basically becomes a trolley problem.
Well, because you sacrifice three young people who have a special gift and also were, like, I guess mutated is the probably correct term due to a street drug when the mothers were pregnant to save, you know,
countless amounts of people who would have been murdered. But the other question, the real morality then is... it's in the fact that they realize that you can make the choice to not do what they predicted.
Yeah.
Including Mr. Water News himself. What's his actual name? Burgess.
Yeah.
In this one. He's not Water News in both of them.
Yeah.
Including Burgess, spoiler, when he's trapped into doing what happens to Anderton in the book. Which is, you know, he's faced with Anderton having exposed him, and pointing out to his face, you can either kill me, and then go to prison for it because everyone will know that you've done it.
Yeah.
Or you can choose not to kill me and prove that you had the choice and that pre-crime is, you know, it's faulty. And so he proves by choosing not to kill Anderton and to kill himself instead,
yeah.
He proves that pre-crime is flawed and that, you know, it's not just, you know, the idea is that they've saved the lives of all these people that they have stopped the murders of,
yeah.
But they don't know how many of those were going to actually be murdered, because people had the choice to not do it.
Yeah, it's a weird paradoxy.
And then what they have done is they've imprisoned all these people who have not committed any crime.
Yeah.
So there's like hundreds of people who are... Because it ran for 6 years or something.
Yeah.
So it's not like they've been doing it for decades. Like, they can go back to the way it was before. But they've imprisoned all these people who have not actually committed a crime. And so they've already created a trolley problem.
Yeah.
Because not only are they... torturing these three individuals who have done nothing wrong and have actually helped them, but they've also tortured, you know, hundreds of other people and put them in this stasis where they've taken their lives away from them, and they don't even know that they were going to commit the crime, and they didn't commit a crime, you know.
Do you want to hear an interesting fan theory?
Sure.
So, As Buster Scruggs says to Tom Cruise, when he goes to visit all the people that have been haloed, he's laughing because he just realized who I'm talking about. Buster Scruggs?
Buster Scruggs.
Yeah, Scruggs. he says that, you know, they don't move, but they're very, very busy in their brain.
Yeah.
There's a fan theory that when John gets haloed,
yeah,
the rest of the movie is just his imagination.
No. I don't buy it.
No, I'm just saying, it was a fan theory that I read. It's not like I came up with it.
No, but I mean, it makes sense that the wife would, you know, the second that Burgess kind of reveals themselves, that she'd be like, and she'd be like, holy shit, what he was saying to me was true and we need to stop this. Especially since, you know, she also was believing in the pre-crime because of the fact that their son had gone missing and, you know, maybe someone could have stopped it if it had happened when pre-crime was around. But yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting... It's a whole weird thing. I do like that in both cases they kind of publicly revealed the... Or, like, they kind of tricked the person into revealing themselves almost in both cases. So, obviously, Water News, he had the wonderful soundbite of, like, I'd kidnap 1,000 children before I'd let this company die.
Yeah.
And, I mean, essentially, without saying it, that's the same thing Burgess is saying.
Yeah.
He literally murdered a woman so that she wouldn't take her child back because he needed that child for his company to work.
Yeah.
His whole company is built on the murder of a woman because, you know, he doesn't actually care about her or about about Agatha, or about the twins. He cares about his own profits and his own success. And he literally will do anything it takes to maintain that.
There is a lot of weird sci-fi that revolves around, like, some sort of creator of some form of technology. One of the episodes that I suggested at some point, I think we ended up passing over it, was Surrogates and iRobot.
Because
both about a creator of technology trying to destroy his own creation.
Yeah.
Surrogates is another weird movie.
Yeah.
Of, like, that sort of, like, is it Philip K. Dick? It's not Philip K. Dick, but it feels Philip K. Dick.
I love Philip K. Dick, by the way.
Yeah. We were at RDB's and I was looking through and I couldn't find any. It was a shame.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I like, what's the one I really like? Flow My Tears, the Policeman Said.
What movie is that?
I don't think they have or ever will turn it into a movie, but it's a really interesting story. I think the closest they've done. I mean, I think there's been some fantastic movies made out of Philip K. Dick stories. But not all of them are good adaptations of Philip K. Dick books or stories. The one I think that's closest to Philip K. Dick is A Scanner Darkly, which is a very bizarre movie.
Yeah. I've been wanting to watch that ages, for like ages.
Have you not seen it?
No, I've got it on DVD. I'm just saying rewatch it.
Yeah, we should rewatch it at some point. Have you read the book?
No.
It's a really weird book.
But
it's dedicated to all his friends who died of... because of the drugs they're on and things like that, so...
Have we got Total Recall and Total Recall?
Yeah, I think it's somewhere in our remake series.
Yeah, somewhere in...
Even though, does that technically count as a remake?
It's the same adaptation of...
It's two different adaptations of the same, which we've done not as remakes before.
One of them's Colin Farrell, and the other one is...
Well, apparently this Minority Report film was originally written as... a sequel to the Arnie...
Yeah, which makes no sense.
...thing. And they were going to get rid of Anderton and keep Arnie's character.
Which makes no sense.
Yeah.
Because he's a secret agent.
Yeah.
But he's not. He's a construction worker.
Anyway, I'm glad they didn't do that. I like the movie as it's turned out. And I do like Colin Farrell in it. I'm not a Tom Cruise fan, but I do like Tom Cruise in it. And I think, like, do you know what the weirdest thing for me rewatching it was?
What?
Because it's been a while since I last watched it. It was realizing who Agatha is. I was like that it was Samantha Morton. We watched her, we've done another podcast episode that involved her because she was in She Said. She was the British lady they went to visit. And I was like, what? That's crazy. And then we watched it and I was like, oh yeah, that's just straight up her. Like, I don't know what the vision of Agatha in my mind was, but I was like, no, that's literally just Samantha Morton. I think she's one of those actresses who changes her physicality quite a lot from role to role. But yeah, that was the only thing that was very different for me watching it, was realizing who she was. But it's there's such interesting concepts in both of these films.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, aside from the idea of, you know, monsters being, you know, scaring kids so that they can get energy, as opposed to just, like, for the sake of scaring kids, the way the door system works is fascinating.
Yeah.
And the whole sequence where they're in the warehouse where the doors go is amazing. Because the idea is these doors, like, get put into these stands and then energy gets pumped into them and that's when they come on. But these guys know making Boo laugh will create this amount of energy, so they're able to unlock all of the doors at once, which means that they can go into the human world and then just find another closet door to come through. Which is really, really interesting. Have you seen Monsters University?
No.
It contradicts some of the things that are said in Monsters, Inc., which is funny, but it's... It's a fun... Oh, like, I think in Monsters, Inc., Mike has, like, a throwaway line where he's, you know... Or, like, there's, like, Mike knows Sully's parents, and there's a throwaway line of about them being in, like, grade school together, and then they meet for the first time in university, in Monsters University, and it's like, hang on, I thought you guys knew each other for ages, and there's, like, a couple other... weird things. There's a really funny bit in it, which is that Randall is a nerd with glasses, and it's like someone tells him he looks better with the glasses off, and then that's why he's so squinty.
Oh, right.
Which I think is very funny. But yeah, it's a weird, we should watch that at some point, just for funsies. But
is that the only sequel? Like a
prequel? Yeah, it's a prequel, okay.
Yeah.
I think they've done like shorts.
It does feel like one of those things that would have like 10,000 shorts of like random stuff happening. Yeah. Like a lot of the stuff about their world doesn't make a lot of sense because nothing's explained, but even explaining it wouldn't make a lot of sense. Difference in some of the characters that are introduced in the beginning when they walk to work is like
the giant dinosaur creature.
Yeah.
By the way, there's a fun trivia fact around that, which is that they had intended for that dinosaur creature to make Godzilla noise.
Yeah.
And they had like written to the creators of Godzilla asking for permission, and they were like, no. Which is why it makes a chicken noise instead.
Right.
Because the plan was for it to be implied that that was Godzilla.
Right.
Going to work as a monster, and the Godzilla creators are like, nah, bro.
You had to really think about their economy. Because, like, you know, Minority Report, there's a lot of weird new technology, you know, like this VR fantasy stuff, the heavily advanced, like, what John's setup is of, like, his ability to produce holograms in his own home. This weird lawless land where they don't have the creepy... social credit, eye scanning, laser technology.
Yeah, I mean, they've definitely got that. That's one thing that I thought they predicted really well. Not obviously the laser or eye scanning technology, because that hasn't. I mean, I think that will happen in our lifetimes. Facial
recognition.
Not even that. Personalized ads.
Yeah.
And targeted ads.
Yeah.
And the idea that like and advertisers selling your data. So the idea that, like, he can walk into a shop, it scans his eyes, and it's like, oh, hey, Mr. Anderson, did you like this? And you should try this. Or, like, they're all, like, pumping ads at him that they think he'll like, and then you hear them pumping ads to someone else that you think they'll like.
Yeah.
And when he's got... Because he trades his eyes for someone else's eyes so that he won't be, you know, he won't be on the database, won't be recognized as him going around. And it's, what do they call him? Mr. Miyagoto or something like that? Like, some Japanese name. And they're like, did you like those tank tops that you bought? Where, you know, and it's this like personalized experience in shops, but from a computer thing where it's like just scanning your retina and going like searching a database for your data, and it knows what you purchased. And then when you go out to the streets, the advertisers know the things you've purchased, the things you're interested in, and, you know, what's going to get your attention.
It's probably what Amazon are going for.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably what Amazon want, because there's already stores.
But also, like, Meta.
Yeah. There's already stores that Amazon run that you can just walk into and just walk out of, and you don't pay anything, and they just automatically
And they just take
you.
It from your account. Yeah.
Which is terrifying.
It's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
But, like, if it works, I mean, so many people are going to want, so many, like, big stores are going to want that over paying loss prevention specialists.
Yeah.
Because there's no loss prevention if people get charged the second they walk out of the store with your stuff.
It's interesting to see what, like, Walmart's doing, because they're losing, like, I think it was something ridiculous, like, $3 billion a year.
Right.
In shoplifting alone.
Jeepers.
They ain't playing anymore.
Yeah.
Like, you have to scan the item, and then, like, multiple cameras will, if you, like, say, you know, do the old trick of scanning a something cheap, but then you put a PS5 through, like people were doing, it'll literally just stop the transaction and show you three different angles of cameras showing you doing it and being like, you gonna put it back?
Yeah, that happened to me in Kmart here. Because I was buying two things that were the same, and one of them didn't have a tag.
Right.
So I swiped the first tag a second time, and it was like,
yeah.
That's not what you got in your hand. That ain't it. And it's like, it's the same product. And then we had to, like, call someone over and be like, look, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, and then she had to, like, delete the second scan and, like, manually put in the extra item. I thought I was saving someone work by just scanning the same product twice. And it was like, I had, like, pictures of it, like, this is the item. This is what you scanned. Not the same. It's like, it's literally the same. But yeah, that's obviously where the future of loss prevention is. And I think also that with the ad stuff, it's the fact that they're bombarded everywhere they go with the ads.
Yeah.
Feels very accurate. I mean, I know it's not necessarily happening in person. Although, I mean, in some places it is.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at what Times Square looks like, that's like just constant. It's like you need ad block to walk through Times Square.
Did you watch, why can't I think of the show now? The one where the guy gets put in the other dude's body and he has to solve a murder.
Quantum Leap?
No, not Quantum Leap.
That's the whole plot of Quantum Leap.
I know it's the plot of Quantum Leap. Why can't I think of the name of the show?
Is it Quantum Leap?
No, it wasn't. Stop saying Quantum Leap. You're like over, like, I'm like trying to build a database in my brain of like the name of the show it could be, and then you just scream Quantum Leap and it deletes it all. It's not Quantum Leap.
So it's a guy who's put in another guy's body.
Yeah, they use stacks, which are like a technology derived from an ancient dead alien race, and they have your basically your soul is put in the back of your neck so you can change bodies between people. The hell is
Attack on Titan.
No. Oh my god, I'm gonna Google it. What the hell was the show called?
I don't know. So what are you telling me about it?
I don't remember anymore. All I can remember is Quantum Leap. I don't even remember my own name.
Your name is Sam Beckett.
What the hell was the show called? I keep going to say Marvel Engines, but that's not right. I Google.
You were the one who was saying something. So that's
yeah, well, I can't finish my thought because you can't contaminate it with Sam Beckett. Is there a new show? What's going on with that anyway?
I don't know. I just Googled TV show about a man going into someone else's brain and Altered Carbon.
Altered Carbon.
I like that that's the first result when I literally Googled TV show about man going into other person's brain.
Yeah.
That was all I Googled. It was like, oh, you looking for Altered Carbon? Is that what you're looking for?
I don't even remember what the premise was anymore. I don't even know why I brought up Altered Carbon.
I don't know. I haven't seen it. I think the question was, had I seen it? The answer is no.
Yeah, okay.
Is that the one that's got Anthony Mackie in it?
The second season did.
Okay. I've seen a poster of it then, I think.
Yeah, and there was a weird animated in-between show called Resleeved.
No.
Yeah.
I know nothing about this. It's all news to me.
Yeah. I don't even remember where I brought it up. Someone in the comments will get there. If you want to comment on this episode or any other episode, join our Discord. The link is in our footnotes. And also you can find our website, ittakes2.co.nz.
Yes,
there's your call to action for the episode. We are a book, is that what you said?
Yeah, that's why we've got footnotes, because we're a book.
I don't know what they're called. How many episodes? 60, 60, 70
episodes? This is episode 70.
70, I don't remember what they're called. Show notes.
Yay, oh, you got it that time. Impressive.
Thanks. I'm here all week. I'm not actually. Do you want to wrap up with some trivia?
Oh yeah, we skip into trivia already.
Well, okay. Is there anything else you want to tell the audience or me?
I don't know.
Okay.
You don't want to discuss the movies at all? Okay.
We have discussed the movies. They're the same movie.
They are the same movie.
It's awkwardly the same movie. Because this was like a fun episode and I was like, oh, going into it being like, oh, let's spot the differences. There were barely any.
I mean, it is very, very Sully's much.
Sully's son was murdered and that's why he's so invested in getting clean energy. And he does drugs and then they pull Mike Wazowski's eye out and scan him with spiders.
Yeah. I mean, it is very much, corporation that he's the best at, but thinks that he's doing good and then realizes he's not really doing good. And, I think Whitworth gets a hard time. Because even going into it, like having seen them before, I was thinking Whitworth was Randall, and then I was like, no, actually, Whitworth's like a decent guy.
Yeah.
So here's the thing: is that Whitworth makes the mistake of trusting Burgess, which Anderson also does, because they keep trusting this old man when he's actually the evil one. But also, Whitworth makes the mistake of believing that Anderton is deliberately malicious.
Yeah.
Whereas if he did things the other way around, it would have turned out very differently. So Whitworth's like, there's a flaw here, something's going wrong, and then, he thinks Anderton is legitimately trying to kill this person, that Anderton is legitimately a bad person, and then he follows up on the stuff that Anderton was looking into, and it's like, oh, wow, there is a whole thing here, and, this is what's happened, and he pieces it together, but the person he tells
Is
the wrong person. And then he realizes as he's telling him that it's him who must have done it. And then it's that horrible moment where Burgess is like, oh, do you hear that? It's the sound of no footsteps coming because Agatha's not there. So the precogs are useless. So no one is going to see when I do this, and then just kills him and frames Anderton again. It's very good.
The jetpacks and the dropping through the windows is very relevant to the pre-crime, like actual enforcement division.
Yeah.
Because they just rock up with their hover helicopter and drop them through windows.
Yeah, true. They do. Yeah. And that's, in both movies, there's this division, the people, when they think something has happened.
Yeah.
So in Monsters, Inc., when they think a human's gotten in or there's human contamination, they, just appear out of nowhere.
It's interesting that there's such a hugely, because they're obviously very well-funded because they turn up, on an instant.
Yeah.
Government department, if they even have a government, who knows? It's not explained.
Yeah, I think in both it's implied that it's the feds.
Yeah.
Or that, that Whitworth is there from the feds and that Roz is there from the feds.
My point being is the fact that has no research been done? Is it like one of those weird the episode of Futurama where they go to the robot planet and they think that humans can, eat robots and shoot fire at their mouths?
No, I think it's propaganda. I think Roz knows that it's not, that humans aren't toxic. But I think there's real propaganda happening. And to some extent, they're perpetuating it because they want people to call them if a child gets in.
Right.
They want to know. And it's, and it's seen when Waternoose finds out about Boo and he picks her up and he's no problem.
Yeah.
And it's like this guy whose whole organization is built on the idea that kids are toxic and we can't touch them, but we have to scare them to get the energy or whatever, but don't be anywhere near them. Genuinely has no problem picking her up because he knows it's not true.
Yeah.
So the whole time he knows that that's false, but he spreads that because he doesn't want anyone else getting close enough to a child to realize that what they're doing is wrong.
Yeah.
Because his whole industry depends on people, on the monsters being as afraid of the kids as the kids are of them, essentially. So he is spreading propaganda. The real question is, where did they get energy from before?
There's a lot of questions asked.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, we've probably talked enough about them. Let's get into some trivia. I haven't taken down much trivia for Monsters, Inc. Almost exclusively everything I've taken down is about Mary Gibbs, who played Boo.
Okay.
As I mentioned to you when we were watching it, she was so young. She was 2 years old when they were recording her. So they couldn't get her to stand in the recording studio and act her lines. So they just followed her around with a microphone and then cut her lines together from things that she said while she was like playing in the studio.
Yeah.
Also, they had initially drafted, like in early drafts of the screenplay, had put Boo as being about 6 years old.
Right.
But then they made her younger because they thought it would make her more dependent on Sully, because they didn't want her to be, you know, in... have an element of independence. They wanted her to like really need Sully to be able to do these things. They also, Pete Docter, who directed the movie, used to entertain her, Mary Gibbs, with sock puppets in the recording booth to get her to laugh on cue.
Right.
So most of the laughter in the movie is him like just using sock puppets to get her to laugh. There was another bit of trivia which I haven't copied, but it was the scream when she when she's in the apartment and she's like laughing and then they take the doll away from her and she starts screaming.
Yeah.
Was actually like the laughter was her mother was holding her upside down by her ankles and jumping like wiggling her up and down.
Yeah.
And then she accidentally cut her with her nail.
Oh no.
And then she was like comforting her and they were like, just can we keep recording? And the mom's like, I guess. And they're like, okay, just keep recording. Right. So they got so it's a legitimate scream, which feels really sad, but then she was fine afterwards. But she just got like a scratch from a nail, so it's not like they actually tortured a child to get that. But it's very sad that she was legitimately screaming for that part. Poor Mary. Also, all of Boo's drawings in the films were like actual children's drawings. I couldn't find out, were they Mary's drawings? Or I think some of them were,
right.
Because like one of them has her name on it. So like Boo's name canonically is actually Mary, because, you know, so they had actual kids drawings that they scanned into the computer to put into the film. And then the only other bit of trivia I took down from Monsters, Inc. was not really related to the film. I thought this was very funny and especially fitting with the episode that we've chosen to do and the topics we've chosen to focus on, which is that it was nominated for Best Animated Feature at the Academy Awards that year, lost to Shrek. But Nathan Lane presented the award, and when he was going through the nominees and he talked about Monsters, Inc., he said, I thought Monsters, Inc. was a documentary about the Weinsteins. In 2002, Nathan Lane had, like, just absolutely did not care about pleasing anyone. Because I think we talked about that in our Birdcage episode. Maybe it was even in the She Said episode, we're talking about Weinstein, that Nathan Lane literally had called him out publicly before any of the stuff was out. So he obviously was like, totally, to say that at the Oscars is hilarious.
What was the one that Ricky Gervais basically burned the bridges from, because they basically told him it was the last time he was going to host it, and he was just like... ripping into people. I don't know,
was it the BAFTAs maybe, or the Golden Globes?
Something along those lines.
I'm not sure. I don't think it was Oscars anyway. Yeah, that sounds very Ricky Gervais.
Yeah.
I was going to say Monsters, Inc. Those ones are Monsters, Inc. Minority Report. Minority, Inc.
Minority, Inc.
Monsters Report.
Minority, Inc.
So an interesting fact is that Steven Spielberg and Tom Cruise did not take their usual salary for the movie, because they wanted to keep the budget under $100 million, and agreed instead to take 15% of the film's gross.
It's made like 360, right?
Something like that. We can get to the budget box office shortly. Spoilers. You've already looked it up. I see how it is. And here's another fun thing about it is, so Minority Report was able to claim the number one spot at the box office the weekend on its opening weekend.
Right.
But it didn't actually sell the most tickets.
Okay.
Because it opened the same weekend as Lilo and Stitch. But most of the tickets for Lilo and Stitch were children's tickets, which were a lower price.
Yeah.
So Lilo and Stitch sold more tickets, but Minority Report earned more money because they were all adult tickets, which is a fun, it's an interesting way that that's worked out.
Yeah.
They also sold 4 million DVD copies in the first few months after it was released.
I don't remember when I bought my copy of
the I feel DVD. Like our, we got ours like pretty close to that. Nokia apparently spent $2 million to have as many handsets in the film as possible. I didn't even notice there being Nokia handsets in it. But
I remember there being handsets, but
they were all Nokia. Yeah. $2 million.
Nokia is one of those companies that sort of like disappeared off the radar because it's just like the two big ones and nobody else buys. Like if you,
yeah, well, back then they were the big one.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it was like Alcatel, Nokia, Samsung, maybe.
Yeah, Motorola. I had a Motorola.
BlackBerry.
Yeah, BlackBerry. But BlackBerry was very much for
BlackBerry was like the first smartphone.
Yeah, basically.
And now you look at it and it's like everyone's got either an Android made by Samsung or an Apple, or you don't bring up who made your phone.
Yeah.
Don't buy a Windows phone, they're awful. Or a Sony one.
Yeah, I wouldn't buy those. I just thought this was funny. When John kidnaps Agatha. Now, I checked this when we were watching it, and I don't think this is exactly accurate. It does specify. So when John kidnaps Agatha, Whitworth says, "How much time do we have?" And one of the officers says, 51 minutes, 30 seconds. Now, I paused it, and there was 57 minutes left in the movie.
Yeah.
But apparently it's the exact amount of time that remains until the credits start to roll.
Right.
It's 51 minutes, 30 seconds when he says that.
Nice thing to put in
the
movie.
Yeah, it's funny. I think I've talked about most of this. Oh, yeah, because we talked about how the negatives were done. Apparently, it was also the first film to have an entirely digital production design. So they used, like, Photoshop instead of painters and had 3D animation programs like Maya and XSI simulating a set so they could fill it with digital actors and stuff when they were doing the actual production design.
Oh, okay.
Which is really interesting, especially considering then it was shot on film.
Yeah.
It's a weird decisions to make. And what was there was like one other thing here, but I think it was just about the plot, which we already know about.
What old plot?
Yeah, it was about the kind of decision to, you know, choosing whether or not to either commit the crime or to
do the time.
To commit the crime and do the time. Or to not commit the crime and prove that the whole system was flawed.
Yeah.
Yes, we've already talked about them. So budget and box office. Where do you think, which of them do you think had a larger budget?
Monsters, Inc. does by $15 million.
By less than that, $13 million okay. difference. Yeah, so budget of $102 million for Minority Report, $115 million for Monsters, Inc. But this game's no fun when you look it up.
I'm sorry, I just happened to have the Wikipedia articles both open just so I could check some things out that I was talking about.
You didn't have to scroll
about
all the way down there.
It's not. It's at the top of Wikipedia.
Oh, Wikipedia. Yeah, sorry. Because on IMDb, it's right down the bottom.
Yeah.
And then at box office, Minority Report made $358 million. And Monsters, Inc. made $579 million.
Yeah.
So, I mean, both very successful films.
Yeah.
And both, you know, similar budget. And made back more than double. I like both these movies.
Yeah, they're both enjoyable.
They're both very rewatchable as well, I think.
Yeah, I wouldn't say like yearly, but definitely like.
Yeah. I mean, if you're, you know, if you're a kid or you've got kids, you can watch Monsters, Inc. more than yearly. More often than yearly. Just keep watching it forever, every day. No, but it's definitely rewatchable. There's definitely stuff to notice in them, I think, watching them again. And these are both movies that I had rewatched a bunch of times when I was younger, and I hadn't watched either of them in a while, actually. So it's nice to go back and revisit them. And really interesting to watch them with the intention of comparing them, because they're, like, I would not, you know, if you asked me in isolation, I'd be like, I'd have to think for a moment before I'd go like, oh yeah, there's some similarities. But watching them back to back, or almost back to back, it was like, wow, these really are very similar.
Yeah.
And obviously made totally in isolation to each other, because they're not, you know, not even supposed to be competing with each other.
Yeah. It's not like the weird, like, two production companies find out the other one's making a movie. And
yeah. I mean, movie. I joked about that because obviously Monsters, Inc. is Pixar and Disney, yeah, and
DreamWorks.
And, yeah, Minority Report was DreamWorks.
Yeah.
And there is a rival between Disney and DreamWorks, and they do often, like, we talked about the quintessential example really being The Wild and Madagascar, which are the same plot, the same everything, yeah, basically.
Except The Wild is awful.
And I know, yeah, and I know that Ants and A Bug's Life is one that comes up a lot, because very much it was, I think, someone went from one company to the other and was, yeah, like, they're making a movie about ants. Why don't we do that? There's no reason for that to have happened in this case, even though, like, haha, they're the same companies that do these things. They shouldn't have been on each other's radar, really.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because both of them obviously were in production for a long time, because we talked about, you know, I think Mary Gibbs was 5 or 6 when the movie came out, but she was 2 when she recorded her lines. So it, you know, it had been, the production had been going for that long. And, you know, the Steven Spielberg's 2054 Bible, which was produced 3 years before production started or whatever, yeah, yeah, you know. They had both obviously put a lot of time and a lot of production work into these films. And for them to come out, you know, within a year of each other and be so similar while being, like, totally different genres, going for totally different audiences, you know, coming from totally different places. Because I think Monsters, Inc. was a story someone had written, you know, ages beforehand. You know, like, a decade beforehand as a short story, or as a short film. And yeah, then they made it into this.
His name was Philip K. Dick.
Yeah, yeah. This is Philip K. Dick's Pixar movie.
Yeah.
Thank
you for joining us on this weird and wonderful, fun episode.
Mm-hmm.
As I said earlier, there's stuff you can check out of ours. I hope you stay safe out there. And I'll catch you. We'll catch you. Both of us will.
I'll catch you.
Yeah, a giant net.
We'll catch you in our pre-crime labs.
Yeah. Thank you for listening.
And make sure your closet doors are locked.
Yeah, because otherwise the cat gets into it, Lisa.
No, this is supposed to be about monsters. Oh, is that right. A cat or monster? Is that it?
Pretty much.
Trying to get back to the monster world, and we keep locking him out of the closet. Oh my god, it all makes sense now.
You've seen him when he's, like, big-eyed. He's definitely a monster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's trying to scare us, but we just think he's cute.
Yeah.
All right. Goodbye.
Goodbye.